Welcome to the Broken Pencil Booking Company Pro Wrestling Podcast and Radio Show infused with hip hop. I am Wood.
Made daily. With organic, farm to table, localized, neuralized, sterilized, available on Amazon, shipped worldwide, not available on Sundays, but now available on thebeastradio.com. Broken Pencil Logic. You stay classy, internet. I'm Suave Burgundy.
Back up in this thing one more again.
It's a beautiful day in the neighborhood. A beautiful day in the neighborhood. Hello, neighbor.
Sup, though? What it do?
What up, though, neighbor?
You dig?
What's crack-a-lackin', neighbor?
Hey, you know what? I'm glad we actually had a brief do-over. Happy Suavetoberfest.
Yes, Suavetoberfest is currently underway. You can stream the last iteration of Suavetoberfest, as well as Suavetoberfest Plus. Suavetoberfest Plus, hosted and narrated and guided by the greatness that is the legendary Danger One, that is available on the official SoundCloud of Suave for Mayor. That's the number four, not the word four. Suavetoberfest is available on all streaming platforms, wherever you get your downloadable, streamable content.
And as with the last or the previous Suavetobers, this one will be no different. We will have new music.
Yeah, just wait. It's we got some cooking. Just
Ting Zaguan. Today is Thursday, October the 8th. Yev our Lord. I say Yev our Lord.
20 and 20.
And amen. Last week we gave you pure, raw, unadulterated entertainment in the form of our version of a draft. It's better than yours.
The version of a draft. No one else should be able to do it any other way. We are the standard bearers in draft content.
There's a whole lot of Barry Horowitz going on right now, but we have ample reason to do that. Check episodes 15.
Whole lot of Horowitz.
Check episode 15. Also check episode 86. We show you how to do this, son. And speaking of, before we get too far into this, show at BrokenPistolBC.com, BrokenPistolBC@gmail.com. Broken Pencil Logic, you can't write this. Mark my words. Fuck Life Charity. Fuck the casual fan and with the shit. Those are your hashtags. I got them right this time.
At Broken Pencil BC on what?
Everything.
I'm saying.
Yeah. So, moving right along here. Where are we at? So, as we continue, we did our own version of the draft. We did the version of the draft. And this weekend, starting tomorrow on SmackDown Live on Fox, we have WWE's, I guess, annual draft. And that annual draft is going to take place between Raw and SmackDown. The question is... The question is... Is NXT going to be involved in this draft this year?
I feel like the inclusion of NXT is a great thing if it happens. But if it doesn't happen, I also understand why. Because if you're NXT and you're Triple H and you're essentially WWE's greatest presentation and product, why would you not cherry pick the greatest of talent from Raw and SmackDown instead of just taking guys that you know aren't getting a fair shake?
It seems logical. But, I mean, like this, some examples of people who have gotten the shaft, so to speak, from coming up from NXT, Finn Balor. Pause.
Now, Finn Balor's the exception to that rule, because when Finn Balor made the jump, he was in line to be the first Universal Champion.
First Universal Champion.
That's what I'm saying. But I'm saying that he was put into that mode. He was put immediately into a situation where he was the contender to be the top face and top champion on that brand. He headlined a pay-per-view. He just unfortunately got hurt, which for him, I guess because, you know, of how traditionally WWE management sees smaller competitors, put him in a situation where like, oh, he's going to be injury prone, like maybe Daniel Bryan was previously. And then that sort of hurt him going forward. Like, we can't put the belt on him because he's injury prone. And then the trickle down effect on other NXT talent is like, well, they might be ready, but they might not.
The other exception to the rule off the top of my head is Drew McIntyre, simply because he was hurt after winning the belt from... after dropping the belt to Robert Roode. And and then he came into the main, into the Raw and SmackDown rosters ready just to run roughshod, and it was earmarked for the title run that he is currently on now. Robert Roode, though... Go ahead.
Drew had already been there, though. Like, Drew had already been through main roster. He just circled back around, and he did a stint in NXT, I guess, just to get reacclimated, because he went off, got gains, got a beard, dyed his hair a little bit,
became world champion,
back around,
became world champion Impact. Also, he did a stint in Evolve as well as NXT.
Exactly. So, I mean, he's more like the prodigal son,
that's going back to 2009. That was what he was supposed to be anyway.
Well, he was supposed to be the chosen one, but you know how that go.
Right. Also, Robert Roode. So he hasn't fared nearly as well in the main as he should have, as he did in NXT.
They didn't give him any of the same character traits that he had in NXT, which to me makes absolutely no sense, because Robert Roode was probably as close to this generation's Million Dollar Man as possible, and we know that's a favorite character of Vince McMahon. So I don't understand why we didn't just front load him with Million Dollar Man-esque presentation. And then that would have helped another talent, because then EC3, being a one percenter, would have fallen right in and been perfect for some sort of either tag team, faction, agreement, merger, whatever you want to call it. Like, those characters all feed in each other.
And another one, without dwelling through harping too much on negativity here, Shinsuke Nakamura.
Man, that's one of those that really irritates me. Like, if you weren't gonna do anything with Shinsuke, just leave him there. Like, let him do his thing. You brought him up essentially for one dream match that he didn't win. Like, you didn't book him to go over AJ Styles in a dream match, but you had him win the Royal Rumble, which that's one of the things I hate. I hate having someone win the Royal Rumble and then lose at WrestleMania. I can't stand it.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
For all of my watching investment, that is the build to Royal Rumble shows you who's supposed to be the next guy. And the person who wins the Royal Rumble is the person that seems as though you're going to go with them going forward as champion.
That path is almost as bad.
To air quote,
I'm sorry. Go ahead. Go ahead.
To swerve the audience and just completely just say, oh no, this is a one-off thing. Like, I hate it. I can't stand it. Like, when Del Rio, and you know what? It's usually with someone off the color wheel, because they did it with Shinsuke, and the next person you can think of they did it with, they did it with Roman. That's another color wheel, and then they did it with Del Rio.
That
so we can't crown anybody off the color wheel at WrestleMania.
That career path is almost as bad as someone who wins Money in the Bank and does and cashes in and loses.
Speaking of which,
oh buddy,
the miseducation of Otis is going on right now, because apparently the scuttlebutt is that WWE is scrambling for options to get the Money in the Bank briefcase off of Otis.
There is a storyline in the works as we speak, where apparently tomorrow on SmackDown we start seeing court proceedings with The Miz and Morrison to get the Money in the Bank contract briefcase away from Otis.
Number one, I totally disagree with this, because if you don't want him having the briefcase, you should have never put it on him.
All of that part.
Secondly, why are we going through fictitious storyline vignette litigation to get the case off of him? Just let him lose it in a match.
Who have been the losers? Baron Corbin, John Cena, and Damian Sandow?
Yes.
Look at me.
Ken Kennedy lost his case to Edge.
So that's four.
Yeah. But he didn't lose it on a cash, and he just lost the briefcase itself.
Right.
So here's the thing. Okay, watch me book this, and it'll make total sense. Watch me put my broken pencil and logic to use. Friday's the draft, right?
Yep.
Otis gets goated into putting the money in the briefcase.
Money in the bank briefcase.
Money in the bank briefcase on the line in order to bring Mandy back to SmackDown.
And so
and he loses.
So if he wins, Mandy goes back to SmackDown. If he loses the briefcase to Miz and or Morrison, depending on if they put him in a three-way match or a one-on-one.
That part. And he just loses.
So Without me, and then
right after that, you trade Heavy Machinery to Raw.
Without me reading too much into this, when Heavy Machinery they need to stay on SmackDown, because if they go back to Raw and Mandy Rose is on Raw, there goes your whole storyline right there as far as him winning and getting her back on SmackDown. But
check my logic on this. He put the briefcase on the line to save her. He loses, so he doesn't get his title shot. He ends up on Raw back with Mandy anyway.
Do you know how this next episode starts?
But then he starts to resent Mandy.
This next episode of Broken Pencil Booking Company Pro Wrestling Podcast and Radio Show Infused with Hip Hop starts with me saying, why? Why did you have him win at Mania or Money in the Bank?
Because you wanted to swerve the audience like that. That Crash TV that Vince Russo used to be so famous for, like, there's a lot of that going on now. Like, you want to try to swerve the audience instead of doing what logistically makes sense. You don't want to use logic. The natural progression of things. Yeah, you don't want to use the natural progression of things. You actually just want to, we want to try to give you a swerve here or a swerve there. Like, no. We all knew watching Money in the Bank what made sense.
So
we knew what made sense.
Without me reading too much into the situation or reading too much on the internet or what have you, we know that Otis is in the good graces of the big man.
Yeah, that's his saving grace.
The only saving grace that man has right now is the fact that his biggest fan is the owner of the damn company.
Vince and Kennedy is a fan of Otis. So for the time being, you can hold on to it. But here's the thing, the clock is ticking. So when are you gonna try to cash in? Because here's the thing.
We literally wasted 6 months with it, with the case.
If you try to cash in on Roman right now, you're getting slaughtered.
No, you're getting wrecked.
You're getting wrecked and then he's gonna leave.
Exactly.
Like there's no under no circumstances can you give me any sort of a story or an angle that makes me believe that Otis should go over Roman for any reason whatsoever.
Now, speaking of Roman, one thing we didn't get a chance to talk about because we had the draft on last week was Roman wrecking his cousin, Jey Uso, at Clash of Champions. And
that's a thorough front yard beating.
Both of us have polarized opinions on this whole situation.
I want to hear what you think about this.
I want to tell you. So at first glance, watching it, and I haven't gone back and rewatched the match because I watched this match intently, thinking that, yeah, this is going to be a good one. You knew Jey wasn't going to win. You just knew he wasn't going to win. But you knew I never would have imagined he would have lost courtesy of a nut shot. At the root of it all, he lost. Inadvertent my ass.
Inadvertent, indiscriminate. Is this one of those things that just happened?
Yeah, that wasn't inadvertent, because the smirk on the man's face, on Roman Reigns' face, tells us it was far from inadvertent.
He just realized he had the advantage.
Yeah, that he did do. That said, it set up for fisticuffs, the likes of which we haven't seen in quite some time. The last time we saw strikes like this, and of course these were just straight up fist blows to the dome piece. Last time we saw anything like this was SummerSlam, when Brock Lesnar hit Randy Orton with the elbow from 12 to 6 on top of the forehead, on top of the dome piece. And this was family. It was a family moment. Jimmy Uso comes down, throws in the towel. Now, did I like it? Not at all. Do I appreciate?
I don't understand why.
Let me because it was a nut shot. Like, if you don't shoot the pharaoh with your cousin, you don't get grimy. But the only reason why we even are able to see that from the outside looking in is because we saw it on television.
And okay, by that logic, do you think if Jay had accidentally hit Roman low, he wouldn't then continue to try to press the issue to become champion? Like, he'll check on him, but, you know.
I just think if Jay had hit Roman low, we would have seen the progression of one of our most hated characters on television and Paul Heyman be shifted, which I don't think Paul wants that, and I don't think the public wants that, in my opinion, be shifted towards a happier time, if you will. Now, that out the way, I'm sorry, let me finish this real quick. My comparison to this, though, at my post-match reaction to this, was the exact same feeling I felt after watching Spike Lee's The Five Bloods on Netflix. The Five Bloods, when that movie ended, I absolutely hated the main character who was played by Delroy Lindo. I couldn't stand Spike Lee for how the movie was written. And I walked away after watching that film telling everybody this was easily Spike Lee's greatest work yet. That's how I feel about this match with Roman Reigns. Even though I hated everything that happened, when I walked away, I felt that this was Roman Reigns' greatest work yet. Even better than the feud he had in 16 with John Cena.
17.
My bad. 17. Thank you for the correction.
Let me tell you why this was the greatest thing of all time. The levels of storytelling going on with the real life issues between Jay and Roman. So let me tell you why this is the greatest thing of all time. Remember a couple of episodes ago, I told you that WWE and its creative brain trust at the top of the food chain is so far out of touch that they're almost back in sync with what would work right now.
Facts.
So it's like the world has lapped them almost to the point that they're right back in the right pocket. What the story was on the Sunday of Clash of Champions was Rocky IV. Drago,
I must break Apollo you. Creed. Exactly.
He dies, he dies. So you turn Roman into this is by his own admission what his character is supposed to be. It's a high profile super athlete meets the mob boss that'll do the hit himself. So it's stoic, it's slow plotting, it's aggressive, it's physical. He's gonna talk to you while he beats you up, and he's establishing dominance. I'm not being aggressive, I'm being dominant.
The crazy thing is,
so we tell this story.
The crazy thing is, real quick,
what's the crazy
thing? You saying that, and you go back and think about the mannerisms and some of the positions in the match. Everything eerily reminiscent of Rocky IV, from throwing in the towel to the standing over.
Yes.
To the head to the side, like all these things are things that if you compare side for, because I remember Rocky IV, I went to the movies to see Rocky IV.
Mm-hmm.
Now that you say that, I can picture Ivan Drago standing over Apollo Creed, standing over Rocky, like all this, like yeah, go ahead, but yeah, just eerie similarities.
By doing that, they're doing the work in turning Reigns into a full-fledged heel, not just a cool tweener. He's going to do and say some cool stuff that makes you like him. And if you already liked him, you're happy for all this, because this is the presentation that he's supposed to have had for years. But now it's a situation where you have a dominant top of the food chain, undeniable monster that is on television every week.
Haven't we said tweener for the last 2 years by Roman Reigns?
He's only a tweener with people who, you know, weren't just booing him because it was the pop culture thing to do.
Right. Because we've never booed him.
Gave that presentation of. And I've never disliked Roman, but everybody, it became cool to boo him. And then he had that tweener moment that was like really close to heel status when he beat The Undertaker. And then right after that, he was in tweener mode with the feud that you were talking about with John Cena for No Mercy 2017, which probably should have been a WrestleMania match. That should have been WrestleMania 34 for him.
And unfortunately,
not sure why it wasn't. Yeah. Not sure why they waited. I'm not sure why they didn't wait. That should have been 34.
It might have been John Cena's absenteeism that led to that, because wasn't that the one where John Cena was actually had bought a ticket and was housed by The Undertaker?
Yeah. But they had him scrambling for an opponent at the last minute, and it ended up being The Undertaker. So all I'm saying is, Cena was still on television close to every week or every other week. You could have done that exact same program that you did at No Mercy 2017 at WrestleMania 34. Because no one was really clamoring to see Lesnar versus Roman again.
Got you. Okay.
But that's, you know, hindsight's 2020. But I loved everything about the presentation, the execution. Everything of this made sense. Roman is supposed to be that dominant. Like, everyone may have wanted to see a catch-as-catch-can classic between these two, but you look at the size disparity. Roman is supposed to beat him up.
And on top of that,
this is the same thing I said about fighting. This is the same thing I said about when actually referencing that WrestleMania 34 match when he wrestled Lesnar. At some point when Roman started bleeding like a stuck pig, I expected his full Samoan to kick in. And I expected him to fight Lesnar like he fought Jay. Because they're the same size. Roman can throw hands, and we just saw it. So if Roman had done that to Lesnar after he started bleeding and got up and screaming in full Samoan, I'd have been like, okay, now that's what's up. That was how it was supposed to end. You're supposed to spear him and start fighting him like it was a UFC fight.
But did you realize while you watched the match that Jay and Jimmy are way closer to Roman's size than you realize? Because the one thing that they've always done has been tag teams, and they've always worn things that make them look shorter. But they're way closer to Roman's size.
Sell.
Yeah, that part. Yep.
Yeah, they're a tag team that they've worked face for the majority of their career, which means they've done a lot of selling. Truth of the matter is, they're Samoan. No, they're not small.
And then on top of that, Jay and Jimmy have been a tag team of their entire career. Roman was only in the tag team for about 2 years. And
he was the enforcer of that group.
Correct. So on top of that, this is going to make for... So, A Hell in a Cell is coming up next. So far, we have Orton versus McIntyre on the Raw side. We have Bayley versus... So are we going to get Bayley versus Sasha Hell in a Cell? Because you see, the challenge was thrown out last week. Do you think we get that match of Hell in a Cell?
I think WWE logic says, yeah, you get that again.
So,
okay, if I'm doing it, this is what I say. Sasha beats Bayley in some sort of a fluke situation. Bayley gets drafted to Raw. Bayley gets one last match inside Hell in a Cell. Sasha gets her first ever successful title defense.
That's another conversation.
Yeah, because she's never successfully defended the title, so it would be the first time she does it, it's against her best friend / newly formed arch nemesis.
Doesn't she have four reigns?
Yeah, Sasha has never successfully defended the title.
That is insane.
That speaks more to the booking of, you know, that brain trust I was speaking about.
Or lack thereof. So with those two matches we know in the can, the constant progression for a few like Jimmy versus Roman should be Hell in a Cell. Are we going to get a third Hell in a Cell match this year?
I mean, it would fit the narrative to lock them in Hell in a Cell, but the story progression is not at a point where it's a bloodline feud, but it's not a blood feud. So it's not like, oh my God, we have to fix this inside Hell in a Cell. There's no other way to contain it. It's more like, nah, okay, you want to play this game again after I tried to get you paid? Put us in Hell in a Cell so nobody can come in and stop it.
Here's what I don't like. Here's the discrepancy that I have here. Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre going up Hell in a Cell. They just came off of one of
the... I don't really need to see that again.
Well, first of all, they just came off one of the most horrific ambulance matches we have ever seen. In an ambulance match, correct me if I'm wrong, isn't that a blow-off match akin to a cage match, akin to a first blood match, akin to a last man standing, akin to a casket match? Aren't these matches the matches that usually end feuds? How are you going from an ambulance match to a Hell in a Cell?
Because it's WWE.
I can't get that. I don't like that as an excuse. I can't get with that.
I mean, but it is the excuse. It's like, look, they do whatever they want. How long have Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio been going back and forth? Okay, if someone belongs in Hell in a Cell, it's Seth Rollins and Rey Mysterio.
I'll tell you someone who belongs in Hell in a Cell beyond that, just to get it over with. Bobby Lashley and Apollo Crews. If you're going to go there. I'm with you. I don't want to see that, but if you're going to go there, let's go there. But you're not, you don't need, nope. you're not, it's not going to happen.
Nope.
So, yeah, nope. I just, I don't understand.
Hit the buzzer. Nope.
I don't understand how we're going to do possibly three Hell in a Cell matches in the whole pay-per-view that's not going to have all Hell in a Cell matches.
One of those matches is not going to get Hell in a Cell. Now you have to figure out which one. Because I personally think Bayley and Sasha deserves Hell in a Cell.
Okay. Personally. Okay. All right. How about a Samoan gimmick match between Jay and Roman?
I think that's a little insensitive given our current climate. A Samoan gimmick match? Like what is a Samoan gimmick match?
Well, that's what I'm saying. I'm not saying like something where it's more geared towards their heritage. I'll just throw something out there. Not that I've ever seen one. A Samoan strap match, something like that, for the championship.
So you're going to give the green light to the most culturally insensitive wrestling product on all of American television to create a Samoan gimmick match?
Yes. Why? Because it's WWE.
Hit the buzzer. Hit the buzzer. This is a double no. Like, look, we can't necessarily control what they decide to do on their own, but I will not give them a green light and give them credence to start creating stuff that is culturally misrepresentative.
Just you wait. You know someone's listening to us.
Don't.
You know someone's listening to us. Just you wait.
They might be, but I'm not going to co-sign you bastardizing the Samoan heritage. Like, listen. Put them in Hell in a Cell to where no one can come in and stop it. It makes perfect sense. Jimmy can't come in and throw in the towel. No one can throw in the towel.
He's
just going to beat the piss out of Jimmy. Really tired.
I don't want that any more than you do. I guarantee you that. I just think it's going to happen.
Nah. Like Roman being in the position that he's in now with the presentation we've been getting is the first thing that's actually made me want to follow SmackDown and the WWE product. If they ruin this by being tone deaf when the obvious solution is right in front of you, I'm not sure how I'll react. I'm going to go ahead and put something in the swear jar. Don't fuck this up. You have Roman where you want him and where you need him to be the face of your company going forward. Don't fuck this up. Look, don't do it. Don't try to be trivial and mess this up.
The easiest way to hide something is put it right in front of your face, man. And this remains to be seen.
Hell with all that.
We have 2 weeks before the Hell in a Cell pay-per-view. We have tomorrow's SmackDown, which will be draft heavy. I don't think we'll get any progression on the storyline other than a beatdown from somebody. And I will dare say, if Roman beats down Jay tomorrow, we can expect Roman to lose at Hell in a Cell in whatever match it's going to be. That's just a prediction, not a spoiler. Now,
I'll hit buzzer for you on that. Roman, no losers for the next 12 months. the story progression on SmackDown is likely going to be Roman lays down the gauntlet of whatever these high stakes are going to be.
I mean, since he is the champion.
Because what I expect to have happen with this, they go in Hell in a Cell. The title of Tribal Chief is on the line. Whatever other, you know, Samoan stakes are going to be on, so we're being culturally insensitive. And then Roman is going to beat the piss out of Jay until he becomes servient. And now Usos will be a part of Roman's entourage as the Bloodline, but on a tier down.
We'll
because Roman has not been aggressive. He's been dominant.
Okay. All right. So there's another pay-per-view that's happening this month in the wrestling world that at one point in time, actually we cared about. It's still a monumental pay-per-view because this is like, I think their 16th or 17th one. Impact Wrestling is having Impact Wrestling is having Bound for Glory, and they're taking it back to Nashville this year at Skyway Studios. The significance there, of course, TNA was at the Nashville. They tore down the Nashville Fairgrounds Auditorium, and they rebuilt. They built some new stuff in this place. However, they're going back to Nashville just to go back to their roots. So I'm going to run down the card real quick.
So Jeff Jarrett should be there.
No. Not a chance, sir. Not a chance.
Maybe Jerry Jarrett.
Possibly. He stays in the area. Like, it's very possible he could be walking around backstage.
Where's Mike Tenay?
In Vegas, probably gambling his life away. That's alleged.
Not a casino all the way open.
So let me run down the card real quick and tell you what's more important than this card. For the Impact X Division Championship, your champion, Rohit Raju, will be taking on Willie Mack, TJP, Trey, Chris Bay, and Jordan Grace. Yes, I said Jordan Grace. There was a match on Impact Wrestling last week where Jordan Grace had an open challenge accepted, she accepted an open challenge against Rohit Raju, rather, and won, and she held up the belt, and Rohit decided, this was a non-title match. I don't know how you can do that and from open challenge to the end of the match because you lost, but whatever. It worked. He's still the champion, even though he got beaten by Jordan Grace. So this is a 6-way intergender scramble match. For the Impact Tag Team Championships, champions Motor City Machine Guns versus the Good Brothers versus the North versus Ace Austin and Madman Fulton. Ace Austin and Madman Fulton have no reason being in this match because they've lost everything I've seen on TV over the last month or two.
They've been beefing with the Good Brothers. That's where the line of symmetry comes in.
But which is cool. This should really be a 3-way between the North, the Good Brothers, and Motor City Machine Guns. Motor City Machine Guns are done with this one. There's no way they walk out of here as champions. That's just my observation on this. The Good Brothers get crowned here. Deonna Purrazzo, the champion, versus Kylie Rae for the Impact Women's Championship or the Knockouts Championship, which is crazy. I don't know if you remember this or not, Suave, but Deonna Purrazzo was on Monday Night Raw in December and the day after WrestleMania. Why is that significant? Well, they had a vignette for her the week before Mania, and then the day after Mania, she was actually on Monday Night Raw. What happened the following Wednesday?
Yeah.
The following Wednesday, she was part of the talent cut.
Oh, well.
But now she's your Impact World Champion, Impact Knockouts Champion. For the Impact World Heavyweight Championship, you have Eric Young, your champion, versus Rich Swann. This is turning out to be quite the feud. Very interesting, nonetheless. But there's no emotional investment in any of this. Why did I bring this whole pay-per-view card up? Well, this is why. Let me turn on the music for this one because this gets interesting. Ken Shamrock, UFC Hall of Famer, all-around badass, who's also signed to Impact currently, is going into the Impact Hall of Fame this year. Take a wild guess who he asked to induct him.
I know the answer to this, so I don't.
Oh, you okay? Cool.
Just guess wrong.
No. I didn't realize you were caught up to speed on this one. Yeah, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, who has never
learned doctors,
has never wrestled anywhere outside of WWE or outside of a territory that had WWE affiliation, i.e. Memphis or Ohio Valley, has verbally accepted the role to induct Ken Shamrock into the Impact Hall of Fame. Suave, your take on that, please.
That's just The Rock being solid. No pun intended. Like, Ken Shamrock reached out via Twitter, asked The Rock, hey, would you write this for me? You know, you're one of my favorite opponents, maybe the best time I've had while I was in wrestling. I would really appreciate it. And The Rock said, you know, organizations and federations to be damned, this is one of my people, I'm finna show up. It's just solid behavior. I don't give a damn who's upset. You ain't cutting my check.
And never have to cut another check for him ever again, as he's the check cutter.
Talk to me nice, bitch.
Do you think this damages his relationship with Connecticut?
If it does, that's really some
sucker shit.
I guess I'll get in the swear jar again. That's some sucker shit on their part. Like, there's no way you can look at this. I dare you to try to be upset with The Rock for this. I dare you. Because at some point, you're going to want to put Ken Shamrock in the WWE Hall of Fame.
I mean, he should already be there, to be honest with you.
He should be, but he's been doing other stuff. But at some point, you're gonna decide he's enough of a draw to get into the Hall of Fame, and then you're going to have The Rock again induct him. So you're just going to make up for it. So just shut up.
Ken Shamrock has enough weight to be inducted into two wings of the WWE Hall of Fame, the celebrity wing and the actual performer's wing, if they gave that much of a damn.
This is true, but I don't know if they'll recognize him that much on that level. However, if they get out of their skin enough to say that there's some sort of reason that they should have, that The Rock should have heat for doing this, like, you just gotta, you know, you gotta reevaluate yourself.
Take your lumps and keep it moving.
That's it. That's it. That's all.
Speaking of taking lumps and keeping it moving, one Vincent Kennedy McMahon seems to be, I don't know, what's the word, over controlling, overbearing, as it comes to third party social media platforms. So,
yeah.
What Paige, Big E, and even Miro have made quite the name for themselves on third-party social media platforms, Twitch, TikTok, even Cameo, for that matter. Here's an article that we came across on essentially sports, and it's as it relates to a official statement that's been released by Vince McMahon as it relates to these third parties. So it states that Chairman Vince McMahon recently laid down some pretty restrictive rules for superstars following some major heat during the COVID-19 scare. He's instructed all superstars to refrain from quote-unquote misusing social media platforms such as TikTok and Twitch. In an official statement, Vince McMahon has said the following, quote, "Much like Disney and Warner Brothers, WWE creates, promotes, and invests in intellectual property, i.e. the stage names of performers like The Fiend, Bray Wyatt, Roman Reigns, Big E, and Braun Strowman. It is the control and exploitation of these characters that allows WWE to drive revenue, which in turn enables the company to compensate performers at the highest levels in sports and entertainment industry. Notwithstanding contractual language, it is imperative for the success of our company to protect our greatest assets and establish partnerships with third parties on a company-wide basis rather than at an individual level, which as a result will provide more value for all involved," unquote. There's more, and this is the most interesting part of this. "Some of you are engaged with outside third party using your name and likeness in ways that are detrimental to our company. It is imperative that these activities be terminated within the next 30 days by Friday, October 2nd. Continued violations will result in fines, suspension, or termination at WWE's discretion." Now, let's dissect a little bit of this.
All right.
There was, this is a rumor that Big E has netted more money from Cameo than any other WWE superstar.
I believe it.
I totally believe it too. Especially if you are in a quarantine climate and you are active, doing quarantine things to make yourself remain, not stay, but or become, but remain relevant during this time, Cameo is an easy way to do that. And people will pay because people have dumb money to spend on dumb things. And if you're going to spend on something where you actually have an emotional investment and value into someone else that you watch on a weekly basis two or three times, and that person can shout you out, then you become personally emotionally invested into something. So there's reasons why people do things like have these Cameo accounts and stuff like that. I mean, if it wasn't viable, it wouldn't exist. That being said, one of the things with these third parties situations is the E is now taking the third party revenue generated while using, intellectual property, quote unquote, to your personal advantage, and taking that revenue, accounting it against your downside guarantee. So, Suave Burgundy, you work for the Broken Pencil Booking Company, Pro Wrestling Podcast and Radio Show, infused with hip hop. If you use a Suave Burgundy license that was created here, by the way, I don't care how many years you've been emceeing, how many years you've been radio hosting, I don't care how many years you have in stock in this game of Suave Burgundy. Suave Burgundy is property of the BPBC. If you go out here and make this money outside of here and you're at a contracted rate from here at $100,000 a year, you make $75,000, that means I'm only having to pay you $25,000 because you've made $75,000 using the name that I helped you create.
That you didn't actually help me. With me, it would be the one you didn't actually help me create. With them, it is a name that they've assigned you, that you've become famous with.
Not in all cases. I'll give you an example of that. The reason why I use your name as an example is because one person this year let a contract expire, re-signed a deal, and then immediately let the WWE copyright his real name, Drew Gulak.
I agree. I mean, like, here's the thing. Like, I completely understand the way you're explaining it. Makes perfect sense to me because I would never allow that situation to take place.
Man,
we would just not. Like, I'll cut you. I'll be reasonable because there. I could just say no. I own this name before I got here. Me being famous as a result of my own hard work. Suck me. I could just take that approach and just say, figure it out in court, which is going to cost both of us more money than we want to spend. I would be like, okay, look, I realize this platform has made it possible for me to become more visible. So let's negotiate a percentage split. Let's call it 20%. But for that 20%, I want specific company investment in whatever venture it is. So say I have a Twitch channel, then for a 20% revenue split, the Broken Pencil Booking Company would invest in the promotion of my Twitch channel for higher revenue.
Man, you would think that should be the case. I would like to see that too. Here's the problem with that. These quote unquote independent contractors that work for the E, 9 times out of 10 don't have proper representation when it comes to business management.
Well, that's obvious at this point.
Man. So, like, if you had a manager, like, first of all, do you think that people will go out and start getting managers? Do you think that people like Paul Heyman and or Paul Ellering will be now open and available to start managing people on a personal business level?
Probably not Paul Ellering and Paul Heyman, because they're on-screen managers in the traditional sense, and they also have talent contracts, so that becomes a conflict of interest. However, wrestlers like Good Try Terry and Botchberg 9000, they have had agents. Like, Barry Bloom has been the agent for both of them for years and years and years. So they were negotiating contracts during the WCW era. Vince McMahon happens to operate in a different light. Most of the talent that he gets his hands on, especially now, don't have agents. He's getting them so young and bringing them into the system and indoctrinating them in the WWE framework so early, they don't get a chance to have agents to negotiate wrestling stuff. They negotiate stuff away from WWE, and Vince is like, no, I don't want you doing that either. We'll handle that.
While I understand the company's standpoint as far as using their quote-unquote property, you can't, and we've seen this happen in 1996. We've seen what happens when you give somebody the intellectual property that wasn't made famous by a particular individual, and what different individuals can do with that said intellectual property. We saw it specifically with Razor Ramon and Big Daddy Cool Diesel.
Right, there was a whole litigation and everything about that. Here's the part I understand it from the WWE aspect from. You individually, as an individual, can leave from here and go because of your profiled nature as a WWE signed talent. You can go out and get an endorsement deal for $15,000 without asking, just quick.
Using which name? Government or WWE name?
Either or, just using your face card. Okay. Because you're on television, you can use your face card and get $15,000 regardless of whatever name you use.
I'll take that.
However, if WWE goes out and secures this same endorsement, you might get $50,000. Because WWE is going to request a higher number to get whatever talent. Here's the thing though. They're going to secure the endorsement and then hand that endorsement out to whichever talent they choose, as opposed to you grinding and hustling and creating your own revenue. So if you're not figured in as a major player going forward, then they're probably not going to hand you that endorsement.
Give me three talents off the top of your head that stand to gain the most from this type of agreement.
Keith Lee.
That's an interesting one. Go ahead. I'll ask you why here in a second. Give me two more.
For sure. Keith Lee, Charlotte Flair, and who's a good third? Keith Lee, Charlotte Flair, Street Profits.
Okay. Of those three, one of them you gave their real name. Why would Keith Lee benefit more from this type of agreement?
Keith Lee Bennett, and I'm only saying this because of the what I just said about the difference in money. WWE is going to figure Keith Lee into all outside opportunities because, one, he's so, I hate using this phrase, but he's so well spoken. He has such a different presentation when he talks.
Yeah, that I agree.
He reflects well when you put him in situations just to have a conversation. And then being able to be that large of a human being, but have the complexity of being able to see. He's the real life David Banner / Incredible Hulk. He is Hulk from Endgame.
Okay.
In real life, with the cardigan and the glasses, he is Hulk in real life. So he can go out and do whatever type of endorsement deal and represent the company well, and people are always going to remember when they saw Keith Lee on television.
And don't forget, he can still beat your ass.
That part. So you're going to tune in to see him and then see him do the stuff that he does on television. It's like, oh my God.
All right. So is there anybody that you think that this would hurt?
It hurts though. Guys like Big E, people like AJ, people who already have established brands. Like, if Big E's been getting money on Cameo and like making six figures, and now you're gonna tell me that counts against my downside guarantee? Like, you tripping?
So like honestly, like we'll say like if he meets the, because to me that means the bottom line of the company goes up. So like if you maximize your downside guarantee outside of professional wrestling, that means you still got to go to work, bust your ass, and not get a check. Is that what I'm getting from that?
if I understand the whole language of the downside guarantee, it's more like if you continue to work on top of already meeting your downside guarantee, don't you still get that money?
Yeah, you still. Like, yeah. So the downside guarantee means if at the bare minimum at the end of the year, this is what you're going to take home.
So in a way, it seems like if you could finesse the system, you might actually be able to work less days.
You could.
Because here's the thing. If you're working Cameo and you're giving that money, air quotes, to WWE, and you just say, well, I want to do Cameo, and then I don't want to work house shows. I already met my downside guarantee.
But then suppose they say, we need you at TV this week.
And?
Because you might be negotiating to work X amount of dates on your contract.
Do you really need me at television, or do you just want me there because I'm famous now?
Well, that doesn't matter, because if it's said that you're supposed to work, we'll say 52 televised dates. That's one TV appearance per week,
right?
And here we are from January to the beginning of December, and you've only worked 30 dates. That means you're in the hole for 22 days for that year, and you've already maximized your downside guarantee through social media. How can you meet the rest of your dates? At this point, you're in breach of contract without even showing up on TV another day for the rest of the year. Even if you did Raw and SmackDown, Raw, SmackDown, and NXT, there's no way that you can actually hit those remaining 22 dates. It's not mathematically possible.
Keep it 1,000. If I can make 100 racks on Cameo or 100 racks on Twitch, I don't give a damn about wrestling anyway.
Oh, you shouldn't. And this is what I was saying. If there are people who we haven't seen on TV forever, for instance, Titus O'Neil. I don't know if, like, of course, he's an ambassador at this point and he's still an on-air talent. But if you could make the kind of money that you would make in the ring and not have to hurt yourself for it, who would be a fool to not do that?
See, the only difference becomes, like, the talent themselves, their money is cut a little bit because they're meeting their own downside guarantee to where, like what you explained before, if they make 100 grand and a downside guarantee is 150, well, WWE is now only responsible for 50. And then whatever the house shows / other dates, you know, pay for, then you get that extra.
Yeah, that's there. Bonus money off of gates and pay-per-views and things of that nature, which is fine. Because that money doesn't count against the bottom line anyway. If anything, that goes into the profit. So that actually helps the bottom line when it comes to things like quarterly revenue calls.
Things of that nature. And then from what I've always understood, house shows are supposed to, you know, kind of, house show payoffs are supposed to, you know, be a bonus on top. Merchandise, you know, on top. It's just... It seems shady because, like, you getting a cut of someone, yeah. You basically... You're using my ability to grind on my own.
Keep calling what it is. It's pimping. It's pimping. It's pimping.
It is. Is let me peel your pockets back because you out here in the dress and shoes that I bought you. So
especially when your daughter, who's also an officer in the company, disagrees with your stance, publicly disagrees with your stance.
So now it's a situation where it's like, okay, yeah, you can continue to keep doing it. But we gonna get ours off of it, or you can just stop. And what I said they were gonna do a few episodes ago, they're gonna create their own platforms and then place people in these situations. So WWE will have a version of Cameo to where you can buy audio drops and all that other stuff.
Well, let me stop you with that real quick. Let me stop you with that real quick because apparently something came across my phone when I was making mention of this in regular conversation. I guess my mic was open. Something came across my phone about a possible third party agreement between WWE and Cameo in a joint venture. Something similar to what they had with Tout back in the day, which Tout had the potential to be to take out Twitter or Instagram. But it was all WWE driven and no one wanted that.
But see, that's the thing. They're having everyone stop their agreements so they can move in, make their own agreements, and then, okay, go back to doing what you're doing. But we're going to get a cut.
And the agreements are you set the prices and they just give 30% off the top because they use themselves as a broker.
That part.
So, at any rate, I mean, we'll revisit this as the details of different deals.
Oh, it's absolute trash. I'm just waiting on the first. I'm waiting to see what Xavier Woods says.
I want
to. He's the one that absolutely is. He's the one making a whole nother world of income.
He stands to lose the most, and he was the very first one that they allowed to bring an outside entity into WWE.
Notice they didn't say anything about YouTube either.
Up, Up, Down, Down was brought in to the WWE network.
See, then that's probably where a lot of that comes from then.
This is akin to us starting the Broken Pencil Booking Company and myself and my partners who started the Beast Radio, allowing the Broken Pencil Booking Company to go on to the Beast. This is a peek behind the scenes. It's the exact same thing. The difference here is all parties want this work. And Xavier Woods would be stupid to not let Up, Up, Down, Now be part of the WWE network, because even though I say most of the people who subscribe to the network know about Up, Up, Down, Down already, not everybody who subscribes to the network knew about Up, Up, Down, Down. And there's also people who see the Up, Up, Down, Down on the network that don't realize what it is on YouTube either, regardless of how many followers it has and how popular it is. It's just an extra platform. The more platform you have, the more visibility you have. And you also, and a little, another peek behind the curtain, you can double your listenership. You can double your viewership. You can count the pie two ways, the same pie.
I gotta be real with you. Like, looking at the success of Up, Up, Down, Down, WWE would have been foolish not to try to partner with them, because at one point, Up, Up, Down, Down had as many, if not slightly more, subscribers than the
actual network. Yep.
let's not try to play Xavier or Austin Creed. Let's not try to play him to the left.
Not at all.
He needed that exposure, because he's one of those people that if you present him with like, no, you're gonna have to cut us in or have to be terminated. I think he'd take the termination.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. Like, there are some people that could benefit more from being terminated than this, because they'll end up making more money simply because they have the affiliation.
So two things I take from this. I'm waiting for the first person to actually step out and say, you know, I don't agree with this, or I'm not going to agree to it, or I'm not going to do whatever. And I'm waiting for future contracts. Who's going to be bold enough to try to negotiate their online presence? Because there's going to be another talent that isn't under the WWE umbrella right now that has a online presence, that has their own channel or own presentation. And when they get ready to make that jump, that's going to be part of the negotiation process.
Those that possibly could be in that light. And it's not limited to these people, the Elite.
Right. They never go, but yes.
Right. The Elite. We have Matt Cardona and Brian Myers, formerly Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins.
That will be the reason they never go back.
And then there was one more I was thinking of off the top of my head. Oh, Miro. How can I forget? I already mentioned him. So
okay, in that same article you were quoting, they said that the reason this whole thing went into motion is because Renee Young and AJ Styles went on separate platforms, both one being Twitter, the other being Twitch, to announce that they had COVID, and WWE wanted to be able to control the narrative on that. I read something completely different. It was that Lana had gotten an energy drink endorsement without anybody else's cosign, and living with the money but promoting it on her
Instagram and Twitch. That I didn't know, and that's very interesting, because now, because Lana is married to Miro in real life, she can show up, have energy drink placed, and because it's on Miro's channel, you can't really say anything.
Yeah, on Miro's channel, but on her own Instagram, right, it says Lana WWE.
Right. Yeah.
Can't necessarily do that. Which also brings up an interesting point, that Braun Strowman does not have social media that names him as Braun Strowman. It's his government name.
Wow. That's what Paige did. Paige actually changed her Twitch name to her real name. Following all of the, when all this stuff first started going from smoke to embers, she changed her Twitch name to from Paige WWE to her real name.
Oh, and guess who else also doesn't use any, on Instagram, does not use their WWE name?
Is it Truth?
No.
Who?
No, Truth uses Ron Killings, so yeah. But the Wyndham Rotunda, aka Bray Wyatt.
That's interesting too. We're literally counting down days for him, or it seems. We'll keep this, because this is going to be a hot topic for the rest of the year as we start seeing, because there's going to be some terminations. There's going to be some examples made. We'll be here to let you know what those are. Real quick before we get out of here, Triple H was on a call recently, and there were stories about one guy that we heralded for a long time up until about March of this year, Velveteen Dream. And he was asked about, quote unquote, the immaturity that got his way in the way of his personal life. And Triple H quotes, coming off of what was a bit of a rough year for Velveteen Dream, reorganizing himself. You know, Dream is one of the young guys that still hasn't quite found his way yet of who he wants to be. I think it weighs in on him. His immaturity in his life presents itself in his professional life and makes it difficult for him sometimes. Something has happened beyond that conversation, beyond that quote with Triple H, because at NXT TakeOver 31, he had his ass handed to him by Kushida. Handily.
Well.
The last time we saw that was early on in his career, where he was trying to make a mockery of him, of himself, of his own character, where he was screaming, screaming like a little bitch. And this whole match was reminiscent of that, and it's almost like he's going back to his roots again. And I don't know if I like it or if I don't like it. All I know is that I'm no longer interested.
I mean, he's done enough things in public to kind of play himself. He's ascended the mountaintop almost to championship status, where we felt like it was a foregone conclusion he was going to be NXT champion. The allegations came out. It did irreparable damage to his image, and now people see him in a far different light, on top of the fact that he has sort of poor relations within the locker room. And you got to start from square one now. Like, you got to rebuild everything. So now it becomes an issue of, are you going to stay in NXT to rehab your image, or is it just time to go and ship you off to Raw or SmackDown and see what type of story they try to give you? Because now you've burnt a lot of equity.
What about this one that no one's thinking about? What if they just sever ties and let him rebuild his whole image over the next few years? See what he can do as a man, similar to what they did with Drew McIntyre. I guess the difference there is the fact that Drew McIntyre got a chance to go overseas and work. That's not happening for Dream. Dream's from DC.
Exactly. And if that guy ends up in Jacksonville, it's going to be him doing vignettes with Sonny Kiss.
Yeah.
I'm just telling you what's going to happen. Either he's going to go to Impact and act like a big fish in a small pond and going to burn all those bridges there, or he's going to go to Jacksonville, get a nice payday, but end up doing, you know, doing vignettes with Sonny Kiss. And then he got to fix it here. Cause if they let him go, he's not coming back.
He's done. He's done. I agree.
Cause like his ego is set up as such to where he feels like he deserves to be there. And it's obvious by the reports of his backstage conduct. So if they let him go, I feel like he'll hold a grudge. If he holds a grudge, he's going to go somewhere else, cut a bunch of promos, do a bunch of shoot style stuff, keep shooting slugs at WWE. And if you burn that bridge with Triple H, I don't necessarily know if he has the same forgiveness policy that Vince McMahon has had for all these decades, because the days of Vince running the company are shorter.
Yes.
I'm not saying they're coming to an end right now, but I mean,
he has a lot less days to run the company as he did to build the company.
He has more days behind him than in front of him.
There's that. Sarah Stock made the news. You know her as a WWE trainer who was recently released. Also, formerly Rosita with Impact Wrestling. And she was arrested on multiple charges, including aggravated battery, public administration, resisting law enforcement, public order, disorderly conduct, and public intoxication by alcohol. Now, Not at all. Not at all. Now, what's even crazier is she just issued a statement after being released, and this was in Evansville, Indiana, where all this happened at. Quote, "Never a dull moment. I'm just fine, and so is Cookie. Everything will be resolved in due time. I'll keep you updated." That seems very... I don't give a shit. Very passive.
All right.
Yeah, that's about all I got, man. That's just I don't know what to take that. You know, just when you thought you want to feel bad for somebody, they say something like that. Okay, well, you did it. Own it. Might as well. Big shouts to Kyle O'Reilly, Finn Balor. Get better.
Bruh, take it easy.
I don't know if one did something to piss the other one off. The fact that they shook hands after that match, considering the damage that was done, you guys need to go back and watch that match. As the aftermath of that match comes out, Kyle O'Reilly has suffered multiple broken teeth, and Finn Balor, who was bleeding very profusely and thickly from the mouth area, apparently shut the match down early and now has been diagnosed with a broken jaw in two places. What the hell?
No, they like each other. They're very friendly with one another. They have a great professional respect. That's just just how they prefer to wrestle.
They got real. That is a very
that was strong style.
It was very strong style. That was more Herculean style is what that was. And yeah, it was a great match too. You could tell it ended abruptly. But God, after seeing those injuries, it needed to. And also very, very, very special get well soon shout goes out to, what's your man's, Suave?
Ridge Holland.
Man, oh boy. He actually was involved at the end of the Finn Balor match with Kyle O'Reilly, and then had a regular match on NXT last night, and caught a pescado off of Oney Lorcan, which caused his foot to be visibly dislocated on television. There was a snap and there was a scream, and that's all you saw. He'll be gone for a while, and we wish you a speedy recovery. That said, Suave, do me a favor.
Yo.
Take us to the house.
Pencil pushers, heads up. Pencils down.
The Broken Pencil Booking Company, a pro wrestling podcast infused with hip-hop. Available on all streaming platforms, including TheBeastRadio.com.